That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound.
Good Tuesday morning, you're tuned in listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, all we heard on CJLO 1690 AM here inside of Montreal. On this week's episode, it is an anniversary review for La Haine, celebrating its 30th anniversary. Danny joins me for that one, and as well to our final Mission Impossible film from our Mission Impossible retrospective, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation from director Christopher McQuarrie. First, it is DVD Tuesday for August the 26th. Here's what is out. You have Ghostlight, which is a comedy drama arriving out onto DVD and digital. Karate Kid Legends. This one stars Jackie Chan and Ralph DiMaggio. This one arrives out onto DVD. The King of Kings, an animation based on the Charles Dickens novel The Life of Our Lord, arrives out onto DVD. The live-action Lilo and Stitch also arrives out onto DVD. Let's get to some music to get your morning started here. We're going to hear Georgia Hammer with the track Eye of the Storm off of the same-titled album. We're going to hear Kate Trinidad with the track Home. And then finally, we're going to hear Teddy Bears featuring Iggy Pop, Punk Rocker, as featured inside of the James Gunn film Superman. You are tuned in listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, only heard on CJLO 1690 AM here inside of Montreal. My name is Remy.
the eye of the storm. There's you and I on the shore, and I hold my breath as you breathe out loud.
Welcome back. You're tuning in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, only heard on CJLO 1690 AM here inside of Montreal. We are with our final film from our Mission Impossible retrospective, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, from director Christopher McQuarrie. A huge thank you to Omar Sonics for his donation to this past year's funding drive for CJLO 1690 AM. And if you want to support our show this year and donate to the CJLO 1690 AM funding drive, then maybe you can decide next year's retrospective for At the Movies. So always a good opportunity and never a bad opportunity to donate to the CJLO funding drive. For now though, let's take a listen to our retrospective for Mission Impossible Rogue Nation from director Christopher McQuarrie.
As always, should you or any member of your armed force be caught or killed, the Secretary will disavow all knowledge of your actions. And Mr. Hunt, the next time you go on holiday, please be good enough to let us know where you're going.
This message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
If I let you know where I'm going, I won't be on holiday.
So with the IMF now disbanded and Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise, out in the cold, a new threat called the Syndicate soon emerges. The Syndicate is a network of highly skilled operatives who are dedicated to establishing a new world order via an escalating series of terrorist attacks. Faced with what may be the most impossible mission yet, Ethan gathers his team and joins forces with Elsa Faust. Thank you. Elsa Faust, played by Rebecca Ferguson, a disavowed British agent who may or may not be a member of the definitely rogue nation. So let's talk about the director's vision, because I think that out of all the Mission Impossibles that we've seen, each one of them came up with their own vision of it. I think that I've enjoyed Christopher McQuarrie's vision and direction style for the past Mission Impossible franchise that he's been at the helm at. His direction and to set up the different set pieces, I feel that the pacing works great. And this is more of an open world Mission Impossible now. And I definitely appreciated his direction for setting up the different missions, but also the pacing and making the world more open to Mission Impossible. What did you think about the director's vision, and what did you think about McQuarrie's vision for Mission Impossible?
Well, I think that it was pretty interesting what was done here with the terrorist group, the Syndicate, who in the beginning they know very little about. With this terrorist group, it would be easy to debate that they were Napoleonic in the respect that at some point, they murdered the Austrian chancellor, and then they were attempting to go over the go after the British prime minister. So, yeah, they were attempting to establish a new world order,
essentially speaking. And how did you think that McQuarrie sets up the Syndicate? Did you like the way that he sets it up for like further films down the line?
I think it was beautifully done, and what made things really interesting was how the IMF itself was terminated, so to speak, because of their supposed wrongful actions.
That made
things very interesting.
Let's talk about the villains here. We have the central villain of Sean Harris as Solomon Lane. And seeing last week we viewed Mission Impossible 3 and discussed that, and Philip Seymour Hoffman had a great performance as the villain inside of Mission Impossible 3. Probably the only reason why I appreciate Mission Impossible 3. So, yeah, I found it a little bit more overwhelming. Or not overwhelming, but underwhelming, Sean Harris as compared to Philip Seymour Hoffman and Solomon Lane. Solomon Lane, I feel, is more subdued, even though he is diabolical and maniacal. There's the interesting premise on to how he uses like former agents from the CIA and other agencies, and he puts them inside of to do the evil work that he's been planning for the syndicate.
It's a very interesting comparison between the Solomon Lane character, the Solomon Lane, the villain of Solomon Lane, compared to Philip Seymour Hoffman's character in the third Mission Impossible. Because with Philip Seymour Hoffman's character, they knew a lot about this person. Where in this film, Solomon Lane, they know very little about him. They just have a sketch of him. It's a sketch of a creepy looking guy with glasses. That's all they really know in the beginning.
So let's talk about Ethan's friends. So you have a few returning friends, like Simon Pegg as Benji, and you also have Luther too, played by Ving Rhames. However, I gotta say that it's a great introduction to the character of Elsa Faust from Rebecca Ferguson. I mean, what I truly like about this character is that she plays both sides of the aisle, and you don't know which side she's on and working for who, which is purely great and what makes the Mission Impossible series so strong, I feel.
And also, what became more surprising later on is she was also connected to British intelligence.
You also have the Jeremy Renner and Alec Baldwin, who are great additions to the CIA and also the IMF series, which I truly enjoyed as well too.
It was fascinating to see with Ving Rhames' character, Luther Stickle. Not only did he once again display his loyalty to Ethan Hunt, but he also displayed his loyalty to IMF, because as soon as he heard that IMF was terminated, he resigned, even though he was offered the chance to work for CIA after. He said, "No, screw it. I'm resigning."
Also, I feel what's great about this Ethan's friends too, going back to this, is like this is the first time that we actually see, Benji in trouble, per se.
Yeah. No, it is, because Benji is a behind the scenes agent, not a field agent like Ethan is. But we saw him more as a field agent in this film.
So let's talk about the question Mission Impossible, which I truly feel that this was like the ultimate Mission Impossible. It's the first one where we see Tom Cruise hanging from the plane inside of the opening of the film, which will set the series on par with other action films, I feel. And that truly sets the mood for the film, just seeing him hanging on to a plane as it's taking off. Definitely enjoyed the Casablanca montage there when they go to Casablanca for Elsa Faust, and they have to do a bait and switch there, and Benji needs to get into a secret government office that he has to get into. More switches happen inside of this film, and then truly the final bait and switch is really well done as well too.
And I'd like to add that how interesting it was that Ethan Hunt's physical toughness was put to the test on a number of occasions. When he was one on more than one occasion, he went up against in a fist fight against somebody twice his size.
True, true. Okay, so any final thoughts about the series as a whole for Mission Impossible 5? I find that it's a rejuvenation for the series, myself having Rogue Nation, helmed by director Christopher McQuarrie. And you can see that it's like a rejuvenation for the series because of the fact that McQuarrie would helm the series right up until the final Mission Impossible that came out this year. I'm sad that we couldn't get to the final Mission Impossible film to talk about that one, but I definitely enjoyed discussing the Mission Impossible films with you, all of them, including Mission Impossible 3, which I do have maybe a little bit of a deeper appreciation for, given my reluctancy to revisit that one.
Well, no, my final thoughts on this film, it was a very interesting story. The acting altogether was very good. Like once again with Tom Cruise, his physical toughness was really put to the test throughout the film, and I think he did a really good job of that. So
Our Mission Impossible rankings from the four that we've seen.
ooh.
Okay, so here's where I stand first. I'll go with where I stand. I go with Mission Impossible 5 as the ultimate Mission Impossible film. I go with Mission Impossible 1 from Brian De Palma as my number 2. Mission Impossible 2 as my number 3 because I have really a deep appreciation for the film. And Mission Impossible 3 as my final.
Ooh. Well, for me, the first one would be ranked last. I'd have to say that
Let's just go with what was your favorite one from the retrospective that we've done?
I'd have to say the third one, actually.
A lot of people enjoy the third one because of, the interplay that Ethan has a private life. However, I feel that the mask is off with the private life, and you already know how it's going to end up at the very end of it. Even though I did have a greater appreciation for Philip Seymour Hoffman's character,
Well, that's one of the reasons
and
why I pick it as number one, actually.
I also didn't like the way that JJ does certain scenes and the lighting choices that he uses for the scenes, and probably that's why it is dead last for me. I feel that the other directors that have helmed, including McCrory, De Palma, and Wu, all brought their signature style. Don't get me wrong, Abrams brought his style for Mission Impossible 3, but it doesn't work, I feel, for the series as a whole. So I guess that we can once again thank Omar Sonnex for his donation to this past year's funding drive for CJLO 1690 AM and for selecting this retrospective. And like we said, if you want to select next year's retrospective for At the Movies, then all you have to do is donate to this year's At the Movies funding, well, CJLO funding drive. All you have to do is donate to this year's CJLO funding drive and show us that you've donated to the funding drive through CJLO's website or through the At the Movies, and our program director will let us know and we'll set something up where we can discuss our next summer's retrospective. All right, when we come back, we will have our Cinematic Fridays and we will take a look at Matthew Cassavetes' Lahen celebrating its 30th anniversary. Once again, you're tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds Only Heard on CJLO 1690 AM here inside of Montreal.
Stanza, guardi le stelle. What the hell happened?
It's the last call. Drink them if you got them.
Let's go back to your place and you can take advantage of my poor judgment.
I depend on your poor judgment.
I want to know if I can take this seriously.
What do you need to take it seriously?
Come on, kids, get a room.
Sorry, Miss Kitty.
That was a little bit of a taste of Caught Stealing, the new film from director Darren Aronofsky, starring Austin Butler and Zoe Kravitz. One of the films arriving out for your Cinematic Fridays for the final Friday in August the 29th, you have Caught Stealing, starring Zoe Kravitz and Austin Butler, directed by Darren Aronofsky. You have Splitsville. This is apparently one of the best comedies of the year, so I've heard. You also have The Roses. It's Olivia Colman against Benedict Cumberbatch inside of this film for The Roses. And then finally, you have The Toxic Avenger arriving out inside select theaters. And that's your Cinematic Fridays for August the 29th. And now, Downey joins me for an anniversary review where we take a look at La Haine, celebrating its 30th anniversary from director Matthew Kasavitz. Welcome back. You're tuned in and listening to At the Movies, with Iconic Sounds Only Heard on CJLO 1690 AM here inside of Montreal. Danny and I take a look at La Haine, celebrating its 30th anniversary from director, Matthew Kasavitz. So, La Haine at 30, directed by Matthew Kasavitz. When a young Arab is arrested and beaten unconscious by the police, a riot erupts in the notoriously violent suburbs outside of Paris. Three victims' peers, Vincent Cassel, Saeed, and Hubert, wander aimlessly about their home turf in the aftermath of the violence as they try to come to grips with the outrage over the brutal incident. After one of the men finds a police officer's discarded weapon, Vince, their night seems poised to take a bleak turn. Jusqu'ici, tout va bien. Let's talk about the themes from La Haine. I think that I will... Well, La Haine basically talks about hate. However...
It's a French word for hatred.
Mm-hmm. However, before we get to hate, I just want to say that right away we get to what the film will be about, the central premise of the film, even if it's about hate. Juxtapose the opening scenes of the opening film is set to Bob Marley's song Burning and Looting. This will be one of the central themes of the film, police and violence. As we learn, a man named Abdel was taken to the hospital after being by the police. So Kasavitz was inspired by real cases, while the film depicts a fictional case, and it's not far to delusion that we see this on the news, and that we can take any case and see that, you know, this is going to be about police brutality.
Well, one thing I'd like to add is when it comes to social media, we're oftentimes informed of racial divide and police brutality occurring in the United States, but not often enough are we informed of racial divide and police brutality occurring in other countries in the world. It is happening in other countries in the world, but we're oftentimes left in the dark about it.
Hate is the central theme of La Haine, one of the central themes from La Haine. As Hubert says inside of the film, La Haine attire La Haine, which hate attracts hate. So what is the boiling point for each character? Each fraternity inside of the film, faction of La Haine, has La Haine for one another. For example, the people inside of the banlieues have hate for the police. The police have hate for the people inside of the banlieues. When I mean the banlieues, I'm talking about Vince's character, Saeed's character, Hubert, and their friends that live inside of the banlieues. So each faction has La Haine for one another. But are they misguided or misunderstood? What do you think?
I think that they are misguided. Perhaps a bit of both, misguided and misunderstood. Misguided in the respect that since they live in such low-cum living situations, they find themselves having very little options in regards to what they're going to be doing with their lives. So they're drifters.
How does the media play a role inside of creating the tension? Because I feel that the media creates a role inside the tension, and we see that when Vince and Syed are just talking to each other about something, I think something more lighthearted, or they're just joshing around, I would say. And then the media camera in effect comes in like, hey, what do you feel about your friend, you know, being inside the hospital and stuff like that? And they get a rouse out of Syed, you know, like, stop bothering us, you know, or Vince too. So definitely I feel that the media has a role in creating that tension.
I have to agree with that. I mean, the media in terms of attracting people's attention, they really put a great deal of emphasis on the violent situations going on within certain circumstances.
Here's what I want to talk about now as another theme to the film, the theme of pride. Do these characters have pride in themselves, or is it a false pride of a sense of looking oneself inside the mirror as Vince does inside of like this homage to Taxi Driver? Secondly, do they have pride for their country where they come from, France?
Well, with Hubert, I think it's very easy to debate that he does have pride in himself because, well, he, as a hobby, he takes up boxing, and you could see that taking up that combat sport has humbled him. And I think
out of all of them, Vince, Syed, and Hubert is the most calm and level-headed of the group, and he does have pride inside of the not vanity sense.
And I also think that Hubert does have pride in his country, even though he experiences racism on a daily basis. You get the impression he still has that hope. He still has hope that he will be recognized as a Black Frenchman.
So let's go to the cities and les banlieues, because that's the big part of the socioeconomic things that Kassovitz was talking about inside of the film. So les banlieues are well into focus, and we see everything, including one of the most iconic moments inside of the film that I truly love, is when DJ Cut, where he's about to lay down a fresh track, where he blends the French version of N.W.A.'s infamous anti-police song Cut with Edith Piaf's Non Je Ne Regrette Rien as this type of helicopter pan over les banlieues. However, once we get to Paris, the cultural mecca of France, where these friends are really out of place, most of the scenes are out of focus, giving the dolly zoom effect, showing a disconnect that these three protagonists are finally out of their element.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you pointed that out. Within that scene, they looked very lost, so to speak, because they had grown up in what would be considered to be the ghetto version of France. Once they were in Paris, by Parisians, they were seen as unsophisticated, so to speak.
Getting back to police violence, which is the focal point of La Haine inside of some instances, While the film dances around conflict with the established enforcements of different entities of the law in Le Banlieue and in Paris, some of them are undercover, some of them are inside of uniform, we get a strong feeling that things... We never get a strong... Like, we see the tensions there, but we never get the strong as a feeling that things have gone out of hand when Vince and Said are captured by the off-duty... Or not off-duty, but the non-uniformed officers. They're captured by, like, an enforcement squad and subject to interrogation. And that's where I feel that Lahan takes a different tone and actually shows the police brutality.
It was correction. It was Hubert and Said, not Vincent Said, that were arrested.
Thank you for that. So, yeah, sorry about that. It was, Hubert and Said.
And where we saw racism displayed by those cops in those scenes is both Hubert and Said were mocked for their races. Hubert was mocked for being black. Said was mocked for being Arab. They were just made to feel like they were less than simply because they're not white.
So another theme that Kasavitz gets into is the identity and racial tensions of the film. But I think that this is where we'll probably take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll talk about the identity and racial tensions and also the perpetual youth, as well as get into spoiler talk. You're tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, only heard on CJLO 6090 AM here inside of Montreal.
Mon esprit est déjà parti en YouTube. Ils disent de moi, ils disent de moi que je suis devenu fou. Le cas est double F, n'est pas du tout, tout, tout comme tu le crois, malgré les apparences. Le 3/4 passe à la caille. Mon cerveau a déjà élaboré des plans de char. Doté d'une avidité intarissable connaissance. Cœur tra, fais-moi, je t'emmène dans l'autre sens. Je n'ai plus aucune chance de crever de mort naturelle. Je cours toujours de plus belle. Tu vis à la trace et activement recherché. Toujours sur ma trace, tant pis, je veux quand même dénicher. Trop bête de béton pour un vulgaire latin. Je ne béton que pour quelque chose qui va le bel et bien. La peine, béton pour avoir tué 3 ou 4 personnes à peine. Qui aurait voulu du mal à ma première mi-fa, à ma seconde mi-fa, Tintin, Woody, Delta.
Nespé, Nespé, Nespé. Avant de la jaune, jaune, jaune. Le tuer les gars comme ça, ça et les, ça et les, ça et les.
Welcome back. You're tuned in and listening to At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, only heard on CJLO 6090 AM here inside of Montreal. Danny and I are discussing Matthew Kasavitz, Lahan, celebrating its 30th anniversary. So we get to some of the other themes inside the film now. There is also identity and racial tensions and integration as well, too. So all of these characters are of different faiths. So you have Vince, who is Jewish. You have Hubert, who is Christian, and you have Said, who is Muslim. But all of them seem to have some sort of a respect or an understanding for one another because of where they come from. Where they come from? Le Banlieue. They come together, and they also have a shared hen for the authority figures inside their lives, too, which I feel is another thing that links them.
Going back to the comparisons between Hubert and Vince, for example, I mean, I had mentioned how Hubert, with him taking up boxing, it had humbled him, which is why he doesn't have vengeful thoughts. Where Vince, I mean, he's just more of a drifter than even more so than Hubert and Said. He doesn't really have anything going on in his life. He has no hobbies. So without him taking up a combat sport as a hobby, it seems like he feels more of a need to prove how tough he is than they do.
The mirror scene as a clear homage to Taxi Driver as well, too. Let's talk about the perpetual youth, because I think that that's our final theme that we were going to get into before spoiler talk. So what prospects do Vince, Hubert, and Said have? Sure, there is the encounter with the business prospect of Asterix when they get to Paris, and that is more of a Said thing. And I'll say that this is a clear homage that will later be seen inside of Paul Thomas Anderson's Boogie Night at the very end, where he makes like a gonzo final last stand, I feel. And this is like the final moments inside of Paul Thomas Anderson's Boogie Nights is a clear reference to when they meet with Asterix inside of the apartment inside of Paris. Hubert has dreams and prospects, but they seem to be stolen from him or broken from him inside the riots, as you said, the boxing school that he wanted to put up, or the boxing community that he wanted to have. Vince is anti-police and the question society. The homage is an homage scene to Taxi Driver, like we said. Maybe it's the old man who gives the perpetual youth a story about a man losing his pants while running for a train, with the dark undertone that this was, in fact, during World War II. My friend found this moment really comedic because there are many comedic moments. I mean, there's that one, there's Zosio, the meeting with Asterix, that is clearly hilarious as well too. Part of the reason why the old man's story was funny, because he just gets out of the bathroom after doing his business, and he runs in onto the two men. At some point, these friends are losing their pants along the way too. What happens when they enter a civilized art gallery as well too? We can talk about that as well too.
Oh, the civilized art gallery, they were trying to pick up chicks and they failed miserably. Once again, just because of the circumstances they were raised in, they were seen as unsophisticated by the people in upper class Paris.
Spoiler talk is now inside of effect. If you have not seen Lahen, I truly recommend and cannot recommend enough that you seek it out. It's one of the most important films I feel that you have to see. All right, but that said, I feel that the breaking point for Lahen would be the new segment about their friend who is now dead inside of the hospital, and that is where Vince's Hen has the breaking point when he realizes that Abdal is now dead. After he sees his the news segment that Abdal is dead, he goes out inside of the street and he sees two cops giving like some sort of a ticket, and he points like an imaginary gun at them, where Hubert tries to like rein him in.
Another good example of Vince feeling the need to prove how tough he is. I mean, going back to the scene with where they meet with Asterix, and he gets Vince gets into a little dis gets into a little spat with Asterix. Both Said and Hubert were telling him, "Calm down, it's not worth it. Come on."
So maybe, that's another boiling point for his hand too. Let's talk about the final moments of the film. So the final moments of the film, you think that, okay, well, they're finally returning to Les Banlieues and everything will be fine. However, Vince is killed by one of the officers and Hubert has to make a choice. We don't see the choice that Hubert makes. Jusqu'ici tout va bien. What did you think about the ending from Lahaine 30 years later?
Well, it's a good way to tease the audience, let's put it that way.
I feel that this is sort of along the line. So, Do the Right Thing came out inside of 89, and this came out inside of 95. I do feel that Spike Lee is a strong influence for Matthew Kasavitz's Lahen. However, what Spike Lee uses is he uses the motif of the hottest day of the year and how the heat creates this type of out of character and out of mind where people reach their boiling points. However, you don't need to use that to showcase that several of these characters have had their boiling points already punched through their friend being beaten and taken to the hospital by the police, which I feel that, you know, right away Kasavitz shows you, okay, this is where Lahan starts. Versus Spike Lee keeps on escalating and escalating and escalating, which is a truly good motif, and I feel that both of these two films play well against each other.
I have to agree. Well, I like this film for numerous reasons. Like I mentioned before, it touches upon how racial divide is going on, not just in North America, but other parts of the world, parts in Europe, for example. It touches upon how, yes, racism exists within the police, and how oftentimes police, they spend more time profiling than they do their actual job, let's put it that way. And how, racial oppression exists in other parts of the world as well, because we had just mentioned how the three main characters of these different races, they're set up in the ghettos of France because they're racially discriminated. And in terms of the acting, I thought it was very good acting. And with the character who played Vince, I think it was the best acting job, even though Vince is a character you oftentimes got irritated with. I feel that the actor who played this character portrayed him well, and I oftentimes thought that the facial expressions that he used throughout the film were a nice touch.
That would be Vincent Cancel inside the role of Vince. All in all, Lahan 30 Years Later is one of the most important films that I feel that you need to see for world cinema, and I truly recommend it. That even if it's one world week, or maybe if you're looking for something a little bit different, go and check it out. You can see how Kasavitz was influenced by directors like Spike Lee. You can also see how directors like Paul Thomas Anderson would truly be influenced too by Lahan as well too. That is going to do it for this week's episode. On to next week's episode, I start the big task, I should say, of looking at the best films of the decade. So we're going to be looking at films from 2001 to 2004. That's on to next week's show. Thank you for joining me for this anniversary review, Danny, with the little time that we have left.
And thank you for having me. And overall, this film is receiving a thumbs up from me. It's always a pleasure, Remy.
I will wish you a good week of streaming. And if you're headed back to the theaters, or bon cinema.
Bon cinema.
Could not recognize the faces.